This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
In Zen, we very commonly use the expression no self, even though we might be unsure about what that means or what that would feel like or what difference it would make in our life to realize or experience no self. And perhaps a lot of the confusion arises because it's hard to speak about no self if you're not clear about what self means in the first place. What's being negated? What is this self that we think is problematic? And part of the dilemma is that we use the word self in a lot of different situations and contexts, and it refers to many different kinds of things. And one of the reasons I've suggested we read through Galen Strawson's book, Things That Bother Me, is that he begins by giving a very good, straightforward, phenomenological account of the way we ordinarily use this idea of self. And he describes seven different characteristics or qualities or experiences that go under that name, and invites us to ask how consistent they are with each other, how necessary they are, which ones of them might offer some kind of confusion about what's really going on, because both in science and in Zen, we're used to the idea that things might not be what they seem, and that our initial experience or impression may mislead us into what's actually happening. But we need to start with how things feel to us, how they seem. So he goes through seven different qualities, which I'd like to discuss briefly, because I think it's hard to just enter straight into a discussion of this material without outlining it a little bit. So he says that what he wants to do is outline our ordinary, natural, unreflective conception or experience of the self. And first, the self is thought of or experienced as a thing in some core sense that he acknowledges is not easy to characterize. The self is a thing we encounter, for instance, say in psychoanalysis, when Kohut talks about the self as a psychic structure. We use it as a noun in psychology, the way we might use ego or id or superego. And there, self refers to a kind of set of stable characteristics or capacities. And a self could be said to be either cohesive or fragmented. These are kinds of adjectives that apply to an object, a thing. But it's not as if we think that there is a little section of the brain that corresponds to the self, and that is either in some physical sense cohesive or fragmented. Rather, we're talking about somebody's sense of self-esteem. Are they confident or fragile or insecure? Are they easily insulted, or do they maintain their balance and equanimity? It can refer to capacities like affect regulation, how well we're able to keep our balance in the face of something that insults us or confuses us, or whether we get anxious or in a tizzy or angry. All these are capacities of what we call the self. But immediately we run into this difficulty about whether, in describing capacities, we're talking about capacities of a person, or we're talking about capacities that arise because of the state or presence of a kind of internal something. Our self isn't operating the way it should, the way we could say our pancreas isn't operating the way it should when we become diabetic and don't produce insulin. Is that the kind of thing we mean by the self, a kind of internal organ that either functions well or badly? That's one of the kinds of implications of our ordinary sense of the self as a thing. Second, the self is thought of as specifically mental. That is, that in some way it's an inner psychic experience or awareness that, again, is distinct from the whole person or distinct from the body. We might imagine the self in that sense is always something that's inside us. And certainly when we think about it, we often will sort of locate ourselves sort of in an imaginary space a few inches behind our eyes, you know, with the sensation of being inside and looking out at the world. Thirdly, we use the word self to refer to the subject of experience, a conscious feeler, thinker, and chooser. It may be hard to specify what consciousness consists of, but we all are immediately aware of what it is simply to be awake, conscious, perceptive. Again, is that a quality or characteristic of a person, or is it the functioning of a kind of internal organ? Am I conscious, or is it myself that is conscious? What do we add or make confusing when we switch between that kind of language? What do we, are we explaining something when we attribute consciousness or awareness to the self rather than to the person? What kind of step or move is that? Fourth, it is thought of something single, that each of us feels like inside we're me, one person. And we might have complex inner senses of conflict, or as Bromberg talks about, multiple self states. But Strawson says, our ordinary sense of self doesn't include this kind of radical dissociation or post-traumatic sense of not me experiences, but a unified sense of a self, not multiple selves. Fifth, it is thought of something as a distinct thing that isn't the same thing as a whole human being. That's an interesting and complicated assertion, but the way we understand that typically is we say that I may have thoughts and feelings. I might have a body. I might have indigestion. I might have the ability to read and speak French. But somehow I am separate and distinct from all those thoughts and feelings and bodily experiences and talents and capacities. Again, what does it mean to attribute those things to an I rather than to the whole person? We come across that all the time, I think, in meditation practices. The idea of observing and feeling separate from thought, observing and feeling separate from emotion, sometimes feeling separate from the body, as if we could have a sense of pure awareness or consciousness that is in some way distinct from bodily awareness. Very often meditation was conceived as that kind, precisely as that kind of cultivation of separation, of purification or transcendence, to arrive at something separate from the body or from the temporal and transitory, and being in touch with something permanent. Again, this is in a certain sense how it feels to us. I have my thoughts, but I'm not my thoughts, or I have my feelings, but I'm not my feelings. Part of what we need to investigate is, what do we do when we make a move like that? Is that a legitimate move, or is it part of a set of appearances that we're trying to understand and see what's really going on? Sixth, he says it's thought of something that's essentially an agent. And that, I think, is, again, an obvious part of what we mean by ourselves, that we make choices and decisions, have preferences, that we can decide to have the chocolate rather than the vanilla, that we make a choice to come sit on a Saturday morning rather than to just read the newspaper. We're an agent. We have our own free will. And who I am is in some way both the maker of those choices and the product of those choices. Finally, the self is thought of as possessing a certain character and personality. And that's very much related to our sense of agency. Our character is the kind of person I am. Do I keep my promises? Do I make vows? Am I reliable? Am I honest? Again, are these qualities that stem from some inner capacity or function or, mental apparatus? Or to what extent do we attribute character to a person? What does it mean to attribute your character to yourself rather than to the whole person? What kind of distinction is being made there, and is it a legitimate one? I think that one of the confusions about self and no self arises when we get mixed up about the language of that we apply to persons rather than to selves. When we get caught in the language of the inner rather than a description of the whole. And I think that this sense of innerness and separateness, particularly the separateness of all the particulars of and qualities of who I am from an essential who I am in deep inside, is part of what in Buddhism gets interrogated around the notion of self and no self. But what about all that is going to change? What do we expect to have be different? If you look down that list of seven ways in which it feels like I am a self or I have a self, what's going to be different if we become enlightened, if we understand or experience what no self is? I think we can get caught up in a lot of nonsense if we imagine no self means the loss of things like agency or character or self-awareness or consciousness. There are all these kinds of qualities we've just described that aren't going anyplace, right? That can't be what we mean by no self. Part of what I think can happen is a transformation of this quality of inner versus outer, and a separation of myself from my body, my thoughts, my actions, from my context, my relationships. See, the ordinary language of the self is I have all those things rather than I am all those things. That's one kind of way in which we might see a shift. But the whole experience of innerness, I don't think is going anywhere. I like to compare it to the story of Wittgenstein talking to one of his colleagues and remarking how he thought it was remarkable that in all these centuries, people persisted in believing that the sun revolved around the earth. He said, why did people persist in thinking that for so long? And the colleague said, but Wittgenstein, that's just how it looks. To which Wittgenstein replied, but how would it look if the earth revolved around the sun? See, obviously, it would look exactly the same. Even though we know that it's the earth rotating rather than the sun moving across the sky, it doesn't change our actual perception of it. When we look at a sunset, it looks like the sun is the one that's moving. And no matter how much we study astronomy, I don't think we escape that sense that, oh, it's the sun moving, not the earth rotating. And I think that's probably the same with our subjective sense of innerness. And all the kinds of things that Strawson describes as our ordinary way of feeling things. That's just how it feels to us. So some of that's not going to go anywhere. And I think we tie ourselves in knots or tie ourselves up in fantasies if we imagine that a lot of that ordinary experience is somehow going to be wiped away and replaced with something miraculous. What can happen is we can get untangled from a lot of confusion about the nature of self. We might see that self is a word that we use in a lot of different contexts. But the use of that word doesn't imply that there's a single thing that has a whole set of different qualities. It just means there's a lot of different uses for it. Again, Wittgenstein compared it to the use of the word good. And he said, we can talk about a good book, a good knife, a good job, a good man. He said it was Socrates' problem that he thought there must be one meaning of good that they all have in common, that there's an essence of good that's separate from all the particulars of its usage. And we go chasing for this mythological good. We put a capital G on it. And we make it one of, you know, Plato's forms. But actually, the word is simply used in a whole different way, in whole different contexts, to describe each kind of thing being a good version of itself, of its own potential. It doesn't have a particular quality of its own. It's really referring to each thing being itself. It's not a separate quality. So I will suggest part of what we need to do in this discussion is always keep in mind where we can substitute person for self when we talk about characteristics of self. And it'll make it a little clearer when we ask what no self is, that we don't fall into saying things that would imply no person, because that doesn't seem like that's likely to happen. But I'll leave it there and we will continue in our discussion group afterwards.